Welcome to Windows into Eternity with Almeen. This hour you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Almeen.
We're very, very glad to be with you again. This is Almeen, and we are in the last two segments, actually, of a 13-week run of shows. We always do them in chunks of 13 weeks, and I've asked Rogier Sade to join us today because I love it when he does. I never know where he's going to go with these questions. And it's like that Forrest Gump movie, you know, how life is like a box of chocolates, and you never know what you're going to get? Little bit like that. Welcome, Rogier, and thank you.
Well, you're welcome, and incidentally, I just actually opened a box of chocolates here just about 10 seconds before you said that.
I'm glad we're under one roof. Rogier is down in our office, so I'm going to go right down there and look what he's got in his chocolate box when we're done.
All right. Now, I thought today we'd ask a few have a more historical orientation in the question. So the first theme I want to ask about is really what is the relationship between the Maya and the ancient Egyptians or Egypt, if there is any relationship.
Yes, there is actually, which I haven't discussed much anywhere. I believe we have a part of a record that refers to that in Windows into Eternity, which is a book that is currently being proofread as I record this, that will be out late in 2008. And Windows into Eternity, there's a small reference on one of the records that I translated for it about this connection. And so let's recap a bit of something we spoke about on some of our previous shows. The ancestors of the Maya were 7 foot tall, looked just like the Maya, but they were bigger. And they had sloping forehead, they had the very aquiline nose, the full lips, slightly bulging eyes. They have the elongated head to the back to some degree. Some of them have it very pronounced, some don't. But they're called the West Tatmanu. They used to shave, well, the one that appeared to me, okay, which happened a few weeks ago, had his head shaved, a tuft of hair on the bone right above the occipital area at the back of the head, with about a 6-inch little black straight hair braid hanging down. He had a breastplate-looking sort of a collar on that looked very Egyptian. And what he had is that he had come to give me some information. The West Tatmanu are the guardians, along with another race called the Arunatuvi, of the libraries down in Nazca, Peru. There are two sacred libraries, the libraries of the baby condor and the libraries of the flower that are under those huge geoglyphs. And also, there are some of them in the Ohio Large Serpent Mound. And the West Tatmanu, some of them did not go into the libraries, and over eons of time, they became the race we know as the Maya. Originally, where did they come from? From the planet Maya. Maya means literally in the star languages of the area of Maya, as well as in the Lemurian language, means children of the mother. And the planet Maya is apparently a planet that it revolves around Alcyon. I don't know if we know this. I simply know what I've been told by them. It revolves around Sun Alcyon, which is the central sun of the Pleiades, but it's one of the planets that's very far out. So that is their origin. Now, the connection with Egypt is this. There was a time tunnel link. And some researchers have done some work finding a link between the Maya and the Egyptians. Some have claimed, such as the historians of the Mormon Church, they claim that the reason there is a link is that they were Hebrew people that settled the lands and became known as the Nephites and the Lamanites. And that, you know, the Hebrew people, of course, for quite a while were enslaved in Egypt and picked up some Egyptian culture. It became part of some of their art and so forth. So that's the connection. But there is another connection that came out as I translated the records. It says that just the same way that a time tunnel linked Egypt and Ireland and the ascended masters that are in the order there came through that tunnel near Clonmacnoise on the 28th of January, 2006, likewise, a tunnel linked Egypt to the Yucatan area where the Maya were. It also linked it to other places on Earth. But they went back and forth to Egypt. They started out in Egypt. They then came through to the Yucatan. Some of them settled there. Some of them became custodians of these holy libraries. And some of them studied in a mystery school in a smaller serpent mound in southern Kentucky. So that is why there's a link between Egypt and there. It's actually in Missouri. See, I have not asked Mother this, but I suspect that there's a time tunnel that also came through to the Missouri-Ohio area, somewhere in there, because of the fact that there's an Egyptian tomb that I've seen, and I've actually seen artifacts that have come out of that tomb in Missouri. And I remember being a speaker at a huge convention in Denver some years ago, 1997, 1998, somewhere in there, and that there were actual artifacts on display that had come out of a dig that they did in Missouri. The Egyptians that were buried there came through time tunnels, and I believe one time tunnel either came out at the Serpent Mound or somewhere near Missouri. Princess Scotia came to Ireland to prepare the way, Scotland is named after her, to prepare the way for the mystery order to come through. She prepared the time tunnel, she prepared the way. Princess Scotia is the granddaughter of Queen Nefertiti. Scotland was named after her. In the back of opening the doors of heaven, the master and keeper of the order, the Master Joe in Ireland, wrote about Princess Scotia's connection with that time tunnel. It's one of the appendices. So recently, I found that the grave, I just came from that area, I found that the grave of Princess Scotia is in fact in Missouri. So there was a time tunnel there as well. And I can certainly ask Mother, but I highly suspect that it is either the Serpent Mound or one of the other mounds in Missouri.
Okay, well, I had a specific question, but when you say her grave is in Missouri, that I assume that's not the official story, but or is it?
I'm not quite sure what you mean by
official. Was it a known fact before you sort of uncovered this? No, okay.
I mean, it's a known fact that there's an Egyptian grave for the people who got some of the artifacts, but they don't know who it is.
Okay, I see. All right, and when you may have answered this, but I'm not sure exactly, is when you speak of the Egyptians, who exactly are you referring to? Because my understanding is that the ancient Egyptians is really something that preceded the time of the pharaohs by quite a bit.
The Egyptian history that even really the most advanced students are familiar with deals with the history that comes out of our Sumerian records, which has to do with the imposter God, both being there, and I mean, I've written substantially on this. I've spoken on it about in previous shows, so we won't go there. But it's the history of the Anunnaki family. Those older brother Marduk, who became known as Ra, at first was there. Then Thoth took over, and then Ra came and he wanted it back. Their father, who was known in Egypt as Ptah, who's Enki, asked Thoth if he would take Atlantis. And so Thoth did that. I mean, that whole pre-history of Egypt, that's as far back as people know. But the tunnels were created long before that. And the only place that I know of where that history is available to the public is in the Gift of the Unicorn's second portion, which is the Gift of the Cycles, which I got as dictation from the history keepers. And the mother assigned them to keep the history of the cosmos. And the tunnels were created from that area long before. And that's where, you know, that long before even the advent of the Anunnaki.
Okay. Do we go into the next question, or is it break time already?
Let's see what the next question is.
Well, it would really be why you refer to Mormon scriptures at all as a legitimate source of information.
Very good question. So what we should take a look at really is what is scripture. Because there is a very bad tendency for people to get historical records and scripture muddled and then making historical records, whether they are very accurate, moderately accurate, or inaccurately portrayed scripture. For example, if we take a look at the Bible, a lot of the Bible are pedigrees, you know, whose son was who and whose son was who, a patriarchal pedigree. A lot of them, if you look at Numbers or Judges in the first part of the Old Testament, they're war records. Yet the world reveres it as scripture. So many men were slaughtered on this day, so, you know, the prophetess Deborah ran a tent peg through so-and-so's heart. You know, I mean, it's on and on. This is for them holy. I remember once being in southern United States. Maybe that's why nobody invited me back there again. But I had a preacher sitting in the front row asking me if I advocate my children read the Bible every day. And I said, would you? What parts is it that you want them to read? Because there are certainly parts that are quite beautiful and poetic, and some of it is in Psalms, which are songs to the divine and so on. Very beautiful. And the New Testament has some very nice pieces in as well. But it's a historical record with some inspiring portions in it. The whole thing doesn't make it scripture, because in the pre-Middle Ages, a group of Catholic fathers decided what should be the Bible and what should not. There are multiple books mentioned in books in the Bible that never made it in there. And they are the Apocrypha. And some of them are beautiful. Like there is one of the Apocrypha, which is the Odes of Solomon, is the literal record of someone going into immortality. Esdras, I think it's E-S-D-R-A-S. Esdras, another book, speaks very clearly of how someone transfigures into becoming an ascended master. They've all been left out of the Bible. Finally, you know, I wrote these things down very, very carefully in the book, The Ring of Truth. Otherwise, nobody would know what it means to become an ascended master. Because the ascended masters up until now, if they didn't leave records that were tossed out of the Bible, ended up in the ascended mastery realms, vibrating themselves into a place where they could be in peace with other ascended masters. They didn't come back and write books about it. The reason we now have books about it, my brothers and sisters, is because finally, as of 2005, Mother has asked that ascended masters not vibrate their bodies out of here, because she needed to have physical ascended masters, because it's in the physical where representation of all the kingdoms had to be made. So, are my books scripture? What is scripture? I often say to my classes, when we are in the midst of the most incredibly holy events in our interaction with Mother and Father, you're producing the scripture of tomorrow, of today. So we will look at the Book of Mormon as scripture and not as scripture when we get back from this commercial break.
The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Keys series of radio programs are a part of the Premier CD set. They are available from Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today. After 3 months of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Al Mean experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book has been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness, leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master, and in addition, continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nagual and seer, Almin's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the Heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the Heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Al Mean's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back. So we were just trying to define what exactly scripture is. The Book of Mormon, like the Bible, is a collection of battle stories, of historical records, and it was given to the prophet Joseph Smith when he was just a young boy of 14, along with what is called a Urim and Thummim. Now, Urim and Thummim, my brothers and sisters, is a set of seer stones. And you can look through those seer stones and translate what you need to translate. I've spoken about them before and mentioned that there are another few sets around the earth that's still sitting there, you know, waiting for people to either use them or discover them or be worthy of using them. But they allow you to see things the way they are. Now, there are wonderful interactions with the divine in the Book of Mormon, as there is instances of faith and what it did to people and so on in the Bible. So, okay, we can refer to that as scripture. The Book of Mormon is a valid record of what happened on the continent of the United States of America and south and some north. It starts about 2,000 years before Christ, because of the time of the Tower of Babel is when it begins, the story of the Book of Mormon. And because there's a group of people whose records have also been included in there. And then it ends with a massive genocide on this continent of all white-skinned people around 300 AD. And it says in there that every man, woman, and child had to fight to the last stand. And it's fascinating because the Mormons have been gathering on photographs and documentation of female breastplates, of children's breastplates and armor that they have, their scholars have found in Central and Southern America. So, you know, that history is very similar to the Bible. Is it scripture? Depends what you mean by scripture. Who was Moroni? They say he was an angel. The angel Moroni brought it to Joseph Smith to translate, and he appeared to him in his room. Joseph Smith was an extraordinary man, and he had the ability to clairvoyantly see this being. But this being lived and was the one that hid in the Hill of Palmyra in New York. He hid the massive records of the historical libraries of the people of that continent, of this continent. He hid them. So he's not an angel, he's a spirit. You see, when a spirit is a very light-filled being himself, which Moroni certainly was, they appear very, very luminously. An angel, on the other hand, is an entirely different kingdom. I have worked with tens of thousands of angels, and they are of an entirely different kingdom. So they confuse a luminous spirit, which would absolutely look like an angel, with an angel. A human spirit is somebody that lived a physical life and then went to the spirit world. Possibly at that time there were two spirit worlds, Duat and Sekhet. Hepsbet is what the Egyptians called them. He would have gone to the higher spirit world and would be very luminous. So now, if we regard scripture as the interaction with beings from other realms, my brothers and sisters, we have another problematic area. In that not all of them knows as much as we do. So as Rogier is asking me, you know, why do you quote the Mormon scriptures as though they are valid? I look at it as a historical record. I quote the Bible as well. Some of what's in the Bible has been put there with not good intention. I've uncovered some of that in the last year. But it doesn't matter. They gave 90% truth and 10% misinformation, because the 10% is the usual modus operandi, it's the usual agenda behind it. But, you know, by the time 90% has felt right to your heart, you can abide the 10%. However, I still use the 90%, because truth is truth wherever it's found, and it creates lines through a dot. It's a very valid piece of information. The Book of Mormon. Joseph Smith had further interaction with a divine being that was in Doctrine and Covenants. I don't need to ask who that being was. All I need to say to myself, is there truth here that I might be able to use as a line through a dot? For example, Joseph Smith, I believe I have my history accurate on this one, that he purchased a scroll from somebody that possibly was a grave robber from Egypt. The papyrus scroll was translated and became the Pearl of Great Price. Joseph Smith translated approximately half of it or whatever, half of it, and said, I am not permitted to translate the rest of it at this time. The church that formed around him was a massive, and is a massive, patriarchally run church. The rest of that document that he did not translate, and when I feel his words, I feel that he had absolute pure intent. It's accurate. Someone told him not to translate it, and the being was from the hidden realms. That piece is the exact piece that I recently translated and I put into Opening the Doors of Heaven, that speaks about the mother being the supreme being, not the father. And so that was left out. So, you know, truth is truth wherever you find it. Can I take this a little bit further, just one step? I promise I'll be right done in a moment. But you know, Rogier, just because somebody's in the hidden realms, they appear as luminous, or they appear as this or that. I had the seven lords of light. That was their name. Lords of the Earth's seven chakras. At the time, they had not, according to them, left the halls of Amenti for 500 million years. They came to my house. They did the most massive, incredible light display that you can imagine. I wrote about it in Secrets of the Hidden Realms. Where are they today? Gone. Because of their lack of impeccability. Mother has totally dissolved them. You and I are here. We must know something that they don't. So I will tell you quite clearly, my definition is that true and pure scripture is the interaction with the holy, infinite mother of all life. She has all masculine, all feminine within her. There's an emphasis on the feminine so she can relate to the Father. Or communication with the Father himself. It's only as of August 2007 that the true God of truth has been speaking to the earth. We have had multiple imposters. The story of that is in the Unicorn Book. Only speaking to them and their words for me is true scripture. Because, you know, all the other kingdoms may not even know what you're asking them. They might give you their 2 cents worth. Doesn't make it right. And that's the only pure part. And if that's the case, we're making scripture right now.
Well, that's something I wanted to ask about, because it strikes me that there is this, I wouldn't say it's rampant in the New Age culture, but I mean, in fact, it is rampant, this sort of tendency to that information seems to somehow be sanctified or be more interesting when it supposedly comes from beings in the unseen, either it's channeled or in some other way provided, and it really strikes me that somehow that even seems to just make it more popular than if it's just from those, you know, boring humans. I wonder why that is.
It's amazing. And you know what? Would you have a brain surgeon do surgery on your head, for example, without making sure he has a medical degree? He has a specialty. He has credentials. He has studied, and there's some sort of a validity behind his doing that. Yet people will live their lives by somebody sitting there channeling a spirit from the other realms, even an ascended master from the other realms. The ascended masters have for eons over-polarized into the light, meaning that they stagnated and didn't grow. They have had to, since 2005, pick up what we call in some of the other languages that I speak, there's an idiom that says you have to pull up your socks, meaning get yourself in gear. They have to get themselves in gear just to catch up with humanity's growth. People don't ask for their credentials, yet they live their life by it. A channel says, I'm channeling so-and-so. Nobody asks what validity either the channel has, what filters there are in place, or what that being knows that makes him that valid. Just because he's from the hidden realms, exactly what you say, doesn't make it valid.
No, and let's see. Oh, well, I just completely blanked out again. I was going to ask something about that still.
Well, you know, the other thing that is so fascinating is that I have so many times had beings from other realms give me the wrong answer, not because it's untrue, because of how limited their perspective is. Whereas humanity would look at something from all angles. A being will take the first answer that it presents. They will go deeper and deeper and deeper and are a valuable tool that way, but you have to ask the questions. You have to ask the right questions. They do not themselves necessarily ask the right questions. I've not found that anywhere but in the God Kingdom.
Now, I think why it would maybe seem more interesting to get your information from beings from the unseen is because there is obviously still this conditioning going on about the physical somehow being inferior, or humanity to, you know, inferior to all these levels above where all these lords and angels and whoever are living who are somehow, well, who somehow supersede humanity. I think as long as that idea is still doing the rounds, that this whole business of channeling and information from the unseen is going to hold its allure.
There is another thing that we, that we are basing that feeling of inferiority on, that perhaps we should just briefly mention. Part of it is that we can't see in our estimation. For instance, if you take angels, they can see the dragons can see the fairies, they all see each other. We haven't seen them. That's number one. Number two is, let's say I have a gathering of all these different beings together, and I say to them, can you see this and this? They will all see truth. They will all either see it as such or not. Truth and untruth does not easily hide from them unless it is perpetrated by the God Kingdom. Then they can be pulled, the wool can be pulled over their eyes, but it takes a lot of work to do it, because truth is self-evident to those beings. The reason we don't have that expanded vision, the reason truth isn't self-evident to us, is they primarily deal with the known, what everyone already knows. So they're telling us what we already should know, is my point. Why we don't see well is because we're the ones that deal with the unknowable. We are the ones that bring in all true new knowledge. And that's huge, and it's extraordinary. Here, let's take a commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Almeen continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From this background in the intangible functions of being, Almeen is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almeen, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almeen's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Elvispada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almeen's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back. And Ruhir, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good. I thought we lost you there for a moment, but I just wanted to finish up on one last issue, on this issue of channeling versus not channeling. For instance, I have a magazine that I submitted my articles to, and they were saying to me, yes, but who are you channeling? And we had four or five letters back. We finally had to just drop the matter. They wanted to put me under their channeling section, but I tried to explain to them that I interact with beings from the hidden realms. We have conversations. They are telepathically in my head, either in their languages that I have to translate, or they, in some instances, they speak English and I get broken English in my head. But I'm hearing them directly. I'm asking them a question. They speak back. I'm not channeling them. I walk between two worlds. And they just couldn't get it. Yes, but who are the ones you're actually speaking with? Well, there's an entire cosmos out there. Who do they want me to speak with? Once you make that door as an opening, you can speak directly with beings. And then you speak on par face to face with them. Because they're in the God kingdom, or they're an angel, or they're this or that. They're equal to your speaking to them, and it becomes that way. Interestingly enough, in Taoist scriptures, it says that before the Taoist masters would ascend into the ascended mastery realms, that they would, in fact, speak as equal to the gods. And they would also start to speak languages. And it's been the exact experience that the masters that I work with have had.
Well, what I think is also very interesting, which is just my last point about it, is that what you said just before the break, that these beings can really only give us the information about the known. I mean, that's what you said, isn't it?
Yes, exactly.
Which suddenly it clicked for me why opening up these magazines, it usually just seems so repetitive and more of the same, like as if there's a broken record going on, because there's a lot of talk about love and so, but it hardly ever seems like there is really anything new added or some fresh idea.
And I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for that because it's a pyramid. And people start at the base of the pyramid. They might suddenly one day see, listen, life is a little more than my parents taught me or the church taught me, and they enter the base of the pyramid. And it's wonderful that there are teachers for the base of the pyramid. Some people always stay in the base of the pyramid. And that's because it's uncomfortable to go to new things that stretch the mind, because they end up having belief systems, and those belief systems trap their awareness, and they can't move up the pyramid. But most of the masters that end up in my classes started at the bottom of the pyramid. You know, so I really honor and respect that there are major lightworker teachers out there that are getting people to think about these things, and especially common ground, like these beautiful attributes. I try each time in one of my books to write a part of, you know, what is grace, what is faith, what is love, as an emotion, as a state of being, as an ascension attitude, different things. And take what is a known concept into an unknown depth. But ultimately, growth will stop if we stay only in the pool of the known. So anyway, I leave it up to you to where you wish us to go from here.
Well, I had actually another question, but there's something about this base of the pyramid thing that you just spoke of, which made me think about this, another question I had, you know, for maybe further down the road, considering this kind of situation I have with one of the masters in a little email exchange. And I talked to you about it a little because it was kind of disturbing to me, because they're just, if I just take the theme from that email and generalize it, there just seems to be this, you know, speaking of the base of the pyramid, seems to be this tendency still all over the place to just sort of hang on to these old paradigms of the fight we're fighting with the dark side, and really looking out for the various guises of the dark side and trying to warn people about it and do all sorts of things to, and, you know, I was really thinking, I even said that, you should know better by now, but I just don't understand why there's still this tendency to really be thinking in terms of this old dichotomy still, you know?
It is a frequency with which life began, but which has become obsolete. It's the search for sameness, uniformity, and we discuss it in Journey to the Heart of God, that people define themselves so they can figure out what they are by what they're not. And as long as people are looking for identity, they will attempt to define themselves by searching for that which they're not. And hence the fight with the, quote, dark side. Basic laws of existence say that you strengthen that which you oppose, and the master knows that they create the truth by changing within, so that perpetrators are made. They're not born. They're made. They're the mirrors in our environment. However, you know, the two areas that I see major light workers get hung up is number one, exactly what you have said, Rogier. It's the search for the dark side. And where is it that I can fight the windmills next, you know, like in the Don Quixote book of Cervantes, where he goes out and slashes at the windmills. They will find windmills to slash at. Second area where I find a problem in terms of belief systems in very enlightened people otherwise, is what is holy. I've lived my life as a Toltec Nagual during this time that I've been here, and the Toltec Nagual never allows another to trap them with expectations of how they should or shouldn't be. You know, if I were to wear a sari and stay in my bliss state, I would look much holier than if I wore my lipstick and put on my red high heel shoes. That would definitely go for the sari much more than the lipstick. Masters can get trapped and stay stuck at the rung which, you know, they should have flown by. If they have followers or students or an audience that traps them through their expectations of what is holy. I recently, you know, had this extraordinary week with the masters of the Ohio Serpent Mound Order. And this sacred order, 20 of them, when they came in the class, were brand new. But one of them who regularly goes to Amachi's ashram, you know, during the week she was there, her friend dreamt that she saw light pour in through the ashram of Amachi, and the swamis there and so on suddenly turned into swamis that had red high heel shoes and lipstick on. And she saw this dream, and when her friend came back and said, yes, and Almin wears red high heel shoes and lipstick when she feels like it. Sometimes she wears jeans and flat shoes, but whatever she feels like it, that's what she wears. Then they understood that the dream was trying to say to them, holiness comes in many guises, and you don't judge somebody by, you know, by those trappings. And those trappings were meant to create an ambience, meant to create respect, so people would respect the words that came out of their mouth. I understand it. It was a tool, just like ritual. But at the end of the day, if we get trapped in it, it becomes a crutch.
But if you take this notion of the dark side, I mean, how should light workers deprogram themselves to relate to that? I mean, is there still any kind of, you know, a kernel of truth in the whole notion or of the dark side, or did it simply mean that when illusion, you know, the reality of illusion was removed, that was removed as well?
Well, what is dark side really is the issue. An example, there were some very negative, huge, big serpents. Three of them, one in India, very ancient, one in China, very ancient, a relatively new one in South Africa in terms of, you know, not being trillions of years old, that were removed recently by a group of serpents that have come out of the serpent mound that originally came from the Pleiades, from a planet that we couldn't see. Because they said their planet has been dark and now just starting to get light. But they removed them. So where did they come from? Because Mother has removed systematically. There are no underworlds left anywhere in the cosmos. There are no imposter gods left. There are no demons left. You know, the illusion that there is mainly is on Earth because we choose to still believe that it's there. Things like war and sickness. So what darkness is there and how did these serpents get here? The serpents got there because there were things that Mother needed to remind herself of. And in that specific instance, she needed to remind herself that there were subluxations, if you will, in the flow of her pranic tube. There were areas where there was a blockage. And guess how many blockages there were? Three. Hence, three serpents. And when these things come up, when they shouldn't be there, then Mother is reminded as she is in the process of waking up to her glory because of the sleep she put herself into to get us out of the dream. We've spoken multiple shows about this. But Mother, as she wakes up, she's put these things in place. They're left in place only to remind herself. Mother for a long time thought that building blocks were part of her body. It was part of her forgetfulness. So holograms of beings that no longer need to be on Earth, that hadn't, you know, earned the right to live, were kept alive.
What do you mean by building blocks?
Well, the building blocks
of existence.
Yes. Building blocks would be awareness particles, light particles, love particles, life force particles, these sorts of things. Those are the building blocks. There were seven building blocks, including subatomic particles for matter. Mother produces those. She is made in a field. This is what she finally remembered. She no longer thought that she was made from what she's really making. This was part of her waking up. But these holograms kept being there till she finally said, why are they here when they should be gone? A hologram is really looks like there's somebody, but there isn't. You can even hug them. It feels real, but it isn't a real somebody. There's a few of those left on Earth that should already have been gone to remind Mother that she's not a body. She's not made of subatomic particles. She makes them. Her physicality was different than a human being's. Rogier, let's take our final short break and then we come back.
A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life that provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com. The world of mysticism has yet another reason to rejoice. Al Mean has authored another manuscript of profound knowledge. It's entitled Opening the Doors of Heaven, Revelations of the Mysteries of Isis. Through a time travel tunnel linking Ireland and Egypt, Isis has sent a small group of masters to prepare for the day when the mysteries would once again be released to the world to restore balance and enhance life. They established the Order of the White Rose to guard the sacred objects and the secrets of Isis. In an unprecedented event heralding the advent of a time of light, these mysteries are released for the very first time. Packed with truly thought-provoking information, this book is bound to have an indelible impression on not only the reader, but on global New Age philosophy. To reserve your copy of this groundbreaking work, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016.
Welcome back for our last segment of today's show. And today's show, incidentally, is the second last one in our series of 13 weeks, which we always plan our shows and their topics in 13-week blocks. So one more show, and who knows, we may change the format, we may change the subject matter. But we always plan for 13 weeks ahead. Ruchir, we have just about 10 minutes left. What would you like to ask?
Well, there's still, there's still one theme which seems to, one question which I think will arise in minds concerning this topic we were just on about the so-called dark side, namely that you gave the example of, you know, negative serpents and they were an reflection of so-and-so so that the mother can see. But what do you say then to people who have these more sort of, you know, worries about more apparent concrete issues like microchipping and surveillance and things like that, which seem to be much more immediate phenomena, and, you know, how do we relate to those, or what do they mean then?
The very important part is that we must not forget that you empower that which you focus on. It has become, for many lightworkers, a very primary focus. There is a frequency band in the cosmos called autonomy. It's the diversity within unity. And the way to live from that high level of mastery, which embodies the traits of this vast band that spans all of existence, is in fact to live from the field of the one heart. My brothers and sisters, the way to change what is without there truly is to find what it represents within us and change it there. The major changes that have been done is not apparent to the eye. Where in all your emails going from place to place with people finding that this is a very good way to make money or sell their book or come to me and I'll save you because I'm the one that has the information, where in all this are you truly going to hear that those who formed this elite group, if you will, behind governments of our world with their plans to control humanity and so on, where would you hear that they no longer exist? Nowhere. So if they don't, what are we going to be doing? Keeping it alive because, you know, it writes books, it sells things. People go to the most fear-based radio shows that they possibly can because it makes them feel safe in a world that feels wobbly. My brothers and sisters, this is not the solution. And If there is something that is in your face, don't go out searching for it. But if it is in your face, thank you very much. There's something this day I have to change within me. I recently asked the mother. She sent me into a place where I encountered pure mind. And when I came out of it, I said, oh my goodness, it feels as though I've gone into insanity. And she says, yes, if you define insanity, a mind that has partitions in it. She says, there are 10 things in your life that are insane. Find them and change this. My brothers and sisters, if we can change something that large, the ones of you that are listening to my voice are the ones whose hearts resonate to the love that comes through my heart beyond my information. It's you that is courageous enough to stretch your limits. A lot of what I say tests limits because it goes beyond them. You are the ones that are the major pivot points of the earth. If there's something in your face, find within it what it represents and change it. You know, an insanity in me is to appraise work in chunks. Oh my goodness, I have a whole week of editing this book that I have to finish. Maybe if I work long tonight, I can have Friday off. That's a chunk of work. I only have a moment's worth of work at a time. That's a form of insanity. You know, and thinking that we should plan our future based on today's resources. For instance, I have to decide what I can afford to put out there in terms of advertisements. Currently, I put more out in terms of advertisements than I'm actually earning from the books, which means I'm paying you to read my books. But that's fine. That's currently what is taking place. You know, we'll make it up. But if I plan my end-of-year resources based on the money that the book is generating today, it locks us in. Another insanity. I can't plan tomorrow on today's resources because the very image of holding my dream for tomorrow is going to increase the resources. So insanities like that, if I can change it within, the world outside becomes a saner place. That is how we approach it. And get people to take you off those email lists that perpetuate things that changed years ago. That's my advice. Now, I don't know, we have maybe one short bit left.
Well, I think I did want to underscore that because that what's really currently the so-called dark side really is about authors and researchers speaking of the dark side and claiming to be saving you from it, and that really seems to be pretty much what it amounts to nowadays. And I find it, well, sometimes I just get a bit desperate from it, like when I have these communications with this friend of mine, because it just seems like it's still so, like there still is, seems to be such a need for the enemy to be there. And of course,
yes,
the mind will then sort of race to rationalize things like this, because then, you know, saying that really those things are gone will just be a ploy of the dark side to, you know, say that they're not really there, blah, 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 and it just goes on and on. And I don't really know how to break through this vicious circle in a lot of people's minds.
And a lot of the vicious circle starts with the inner child. When the inner child was tyrannized by, for instance, an over-aggressive father that beat this poor little boy who was sensitive and beautiful like filled being. If such a memory is there, there is an anomalous terror, because the child is not properly being taken care of and parented by your own inner nurturer and parent. It's a bit like pinning the tail on the donkey. You know, when you're blindfolded and spun in a circle and you have this tail in your hand and you're stalled, pin it on the donkey. Man, A child doesn't care where they've been as long as they can get out of that situation, because it's uncomfortable to be so disoriented. They want to pin their fears on something they can at least deal with. They can send an email, they can tell people about it, and feel like they've got some control. When the core is that the child still is terrified because no one ever parented it properly. My brothers and sisters, we have come to the end of our show today. Thank you so much for your presence with us. We love you, and please do tell your friends about the show if it means something to you, that we can gather those together that are of like mind, because it is you that makes these shows possible. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
The Gift of the Unicorns is now available from Al Mean. The magical book answers the question, do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today.
Enjoyed today's show, Windows into Eternity with Al Mean. Please join us again next week.